Welcome to IA, the good, the bad, the ugly, where we dissect, discuss, and debate police conduct, because what police do or fail to do matters. Atif, we were talking the other day, and you brought something up, and I thought it'd be an interesting story for the audience to hear. Why don't you take it away?
Yeah, Garrett. So today, this story, man, it deals with a situation where I purposely named it High Performance Parts, and it deals with a gentleman we're going to call Richard High Performance. So it was back in my good old days when we were just introduced to the academy. And you know how terrifying and how fun the academy was at the same time.
Yeah.
And we had probably two of the best training officers. Actually, one was a training sergeant, but the other one was a training officer. And everybody who's familiar with the Metro Nashville Police Department, if you went through our academy, everybody knows Marshall.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, he had the famous line of, ah, one more, you know. And if you went through our academy, you knew that. And he was talking about them push-ups or them burpees. But we had a day where we had to go off campus and we had to take this driving course in order to operate a Metro-owned vehicle. And this driving course was at a location over by Centennial Park in this old building. And our training sergeant had made it a point to tell us, hey, when we go over to this class, I want everybody in business casual clothing. So, of course, you have people in the group who don't really know what business casual is sometimes because their operational definition of business casual may be something else. So he quickly explained, hey, that's button-up shirts, polo shirts, slacks, khakis, nice shoes. So everybody got the memo. So we thought. We all huddle up. Our class leader, he reiterates the point that our training sergeant told us. Hey, guys, make sure you're on time to this class and make sure we're business casual as far as our dress. Because the other issue that came up was the lady who taught this class apparently was very strict about time. She wanted everybody in their seat by 8 a.m. or else the doors will be locked and you will be locked outside of the classroom. Therefore, you were going to get gigged by the training sergeants and training officers. If anybody out there who doesn't know what getting gigged means, it means you're going to get smoked with some type of exercises, running, or some type of physical activity punishment once you got back to the academy. Again, we all understood the memo. We got it together. So the next morning we show up. I'm there around 7:45, 7:30 maybe. And I see one of my buddies pee. And then we see a couple of people, other people. And we're all huddling up and we're all kind of watching the clock because, you know, like I said before, the academy is fun and it's scary. So the scary part is when you get an assignment, you better get it done or else you're going to get smoked.
Right.
We're watching the clock, 7:45 rolls, 7:50 rolls. More people are showing up. So that we can show that we're doing what we're supposed to do, our class leader says, hey, guys, let's go ahead and get in the classroom, get to our seats and sit where you're going to sit or sit who you're going to sit by so we can get this class started. And she doesn't have any issues with how we're rolling into the classroom. So we're all looking around, counting, seeing who's there. One person is missing. Old Richard High Performance. It's to be known that Richard High Performance has had some issues before he got into the academy. And that's going to come at another time when we tell you other stories about old Richard. But this was a continuous pattern with Richard. Like in our classroom sessions, in our exercise sessions, in our running sessions, he always had an issue. Something was always going on with this kid. It was never, hey, I'm going to have a good day. I'm not going to get gigged. I'm not going to make my classmates run because of the things that I'm doing, so on and so forth. We're all sitting there and everybody's looking around and a few of us even started asking, hey, man, where's Richard? Anybody talk to him? Class leader's like, no, man, he hasn't called me. So the young lady teaching the class, she looks at our class leader and she says, hey, is that everybody that's supposed to be here? And he goes, no, ma'am. And of course, he has regret in his voice. He says, no, ma'am, that's not. Got one guy missing. She goes, well, I'm locking the doors. So obviously, we're all looking with disgust on our face like, shoot, because we know once we get back to the academy, we're going to get smoked. So the only thing I'm thinking about in this class, what could Marshall do to us for not having this correct? So I'm not even locked into this class no more. I'm thinking about how we're going to get smoked when we get back to the academy the next day, because this was an all-day class. So we were there all day. So we were safe for that day at least. But you had to get up to that misery the next morning. So I'm immediately, we're going to be in front of the flagpole, probably starting with push-ups, then with burpees, then a run to the hill, then a nice little jog around the campus for probably about 2 or 3 hours. Just nonstop. We'll probably spend the whole first half of the day getting smoked for this dude. So then we're sitting there, and it's about between 8:01 and 8:05. And then all of a sudden you hear knock, 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 knock. The lady who's teaching the class, she ignores it, but we all kind of look at each other, then look at the door, then we look back at her. And every time we heard the knock, it caused it such a disturbance just from our looks at each other, and then looking at her and then looking at the door. She finally stopped and she goes, "Hey, why don't you just answer that door?" And class leader goes, "Well, ma'am, I thought he couldn't come in." Well, during this conversation, the knocks became a little more aggressive. Then we start hearing boom, 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 boom. So then she goes, "You know what? I'll answer it." She unlocks the door. Guess who it is? It's old Richard High Performance. So she lets him in. She gives him the little spiel. "Hey, you were supposed to be here at 8:00. He goes, "I know, ma'am. I got stuck in traffic and da 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 da." So we're listening to this, but also we're noticing this dude ain't in business casual clothes. So then we're in the class still. We go through the class, and right around lunchtime, we see the lady teaching the class. She goes and gets on the phone. So the whole time I'm thinking, she's definitely talking to our sergeant, and he'll probably come up here and deal with this. So we're sitting there and we're going through class. And again, I'm not thinking about anything in class because I'm like, I'm going to get smoked tomorrow. So I'm just getting my mind right for that. I don't care about anything else that's going on today. I'm just thinking about how I'm going to deal with getting smoked all day. Sure as the day is long, we get up. It was probably our last break of the day. Training sergeant rolls up because I guess he just wants to see what's really going on, because he found out not only was this kid late, but he had on the wrong clothes. So he's looking, he's talking to the lady while she's kind of explaining to him, hey, he came and knocked on the door or whatever. Then he started banging on the door. And then he's looking, he's got this 1,000-yard stare at Rich, and he's just looking at him. I swear, if it was to happen, or if he could have, he probably would have done something to him just based on what he had on. So finally, everybody starts buzzing. They start talking. What's wrong with his shirt? Y'all didn't see what's on his shirt? And I didn't see it either, because I'm just focusing on the fact that he didn't wear what he's supposed to wear. So to just describe it, we all had on business casual clothes, and he had on a pair of jeans that had holes in it and a T-shirt and some tennis shoes. Just casual Rich, you know? So then later, me not paying attention to what's on the shirt, I'm just focused on, again, getting smoked the next day. On another one of our breaks, I kind of look at his shirt, and my boy P says, "Does that shirt say what I think it says?" And I said, "Well, what does it say?" So I get closer to him, and the shirt literally says, "Dick Rising, High Performance Parts." Man. So I go, man, this is getting worse and worse by the day.
Yeah.
Just getting worse. So then I hear somebody on another break say, "Man, why did you wear this shirt, dude?" He was like, "Man, I just picked up a shirt because I was in a rush, and this is the shirt I picked up." So the day's coming to an end. We know what's about to happen the next day. The next day at the academy, we roll up. Our sergeant and Marshall are standing out there in front of the flag before we even get to the building. First thing Marshall says is, "Yeah, put them lunch boxes up. Get back out here in front of this flagpole." And I didn't even bring a lunch box. I just stood out there because I said, man, we may as well get this show started because it's about to happen. So the first thing our training sergeant says is, "Dick Rising High Performance Parts, huh?" And I'm like, oh, man, he's going to start with it right now. He said, "Y'all know what position to get in, so go ahead and get in it." So we're in the front leaning rest. So we're in the front leaning rest while our training sergeant just goes on this rant about people not getting the memo, people wearing inappropriate shirts, people wearing jeans with holes in them. And it wasn't people. It was one dude. And I'm just like, dude, all we had to do is just get rid of this dude the first day when we started seeing issues with him. I mean, it was just little stuff leading up to this. And this ain't even the biggest thing. I got another story about Mickey D's with a gun range training officer that he, I mean, this dude is just, he's infamous for just messing up stuff. And it's kind of like the old saying, you know, they used to say, put a steel ball in a room for in a room full of police officers and they'll find a way to mess it up. Like, he's probably the primary guy that starts the messing up of the steel ball. Like, you got this perfect thing and all they ask you to do is take care of it and do what you're supposed to do. But he'll find a way to mess it up. Like, yeah. They're giving you all these different freedoms. Like, I'll just give you a little one. One of the rules in the classroom at the academy is before you speak, you had to do what? Raise your hand. That was it. This dude literally changed the process because I guess it wasn't good enough for old Dick. He would just stand up and start talking. And we would all be looking at him like, dude, do you realize that we're about to get smoked because you can't seem to remember or choose not to do what we're supposed to do? Like, literally, he would stand up every time he did something like that. Guess what? We got smoked. Half of the stuff we got smoked for in the academy probably was something that he did or caused. Like, it was just nonstop with him. And we could never understand it. And that's why we have so many stories. Like, I could probably sit and tell 10, 12 stories on this dude straight just based off the stuff that he did all the time, constantly. And I know while you were in OPA, you had an idea for them on how to kind of cull the herd in the academy to kind of weed out people who created problems like that or caused problems with the academy classes, showing that they probably weren't a good fit for our police department. Won't you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, Chief, you're right. So, you know, I think almost all police officers probably have had an experience at the training academy with some other classmate, somebody who has just messed stuff up. And it seems like you kind of identify those people early on in the academy. Right. And I know before I even got to Metro's academy, there was this guy I've been working with. His name was T. O.T. He was a military guy, infantryman, E7. And he told me, dude, just get there. Stay low. Don't draw any attention to yourself. Like, he's giving me tips to be successful, right? Because he knew about the infantry life. So I took that to heart. Right. That's what T's telling me. All right, that's what I'm going to do to be successful. The guys who aren't tend not to be able to function like that. Like, they draw attention to themselves. It seems like even when they're not trying to, they just can't cope. They can't function, whatever. I remember one guy early on who told no food in the classroom, right? So, like, day two, you know, we have this huge training manual, all these rules, thousands of pages of stuff. You're told all these things. Here's your water bottle. This is the only bottle you can drink from while you're on this campus grounds. Better be no food in this classroom. So day two, guy's got a candy bar out on the desk. You know, Marshall sees it. So what are we doing the next second? Oh, you think you can eat some candy in here, huh? And so we're all pushing the desk away from ourselves to make room so we can get in the front lean and rest position and start pounding out some push-ups in the classroom. So, of course, he got his nickname for the rest of the academy, Old Candy Bar.
Old Candy Bar.
And so in my time at OPA, there were countless conversations with other detectives and on cases where it was just known there were these officers who were problematic. They had issues. Even going back to the training academy, where training instructors had wanted to kick them out because they were seeing all kinds of red flags, whether it be with integrity, discipline issues, their ability to function as a responsible person, issues with emotional intelligence, so being able to regulate their emotions and be cool in certain situations, not get super angry, that kind of stuff. And so I started thinking, well, you know, there's this early warning system we use for officers who are already off probation they're out there in the streets working.
Right.
And so I started thinking about, is there a way to collect data points on performance or behaviors exhibited in the training academy that might be indicative of future behaviors and misconduct? How could I correlate this? Where do I even begin? And so I had the opportunity, thankfully, for the Metro National Police Department to attend Northwestern University, the School of Police Staff and Command. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, well, I'll do a staff study that tries to come up with an answer. It really was biting off more than I should have for a staff study, right? A lot of times that's used to determine maybe what kind of vehicle a department should go to, whether it's like some new Ford Explorer or whatever. And to make a case for that, to and kind of like a research paper, but it's also a pitch. Like, hey, chief, here's why we should do this. I've talked to these other people from departments. I've done this research. Here's why we should do X, Y, Z. Here's some other options to look at. So I was doing my research, submitted open records requests to the department, wanted to get a huge amount of data. I wanted to understand, for one, on officers we have terminated, what was their performance and behavior like in the academy? What was their driving history like? What was their disciplinary history like? How many uses of forces did they have? What was their typical annual evaluations, scores, that kind of thing? And if these are people that have been terminated because of misconduct, maybe we could find some pattern there. And then if I could connect patterns to patterns exhibited in the training academy, maybe there's a correlation. And so maybe we could get to the point where we could say in the training academy, all right, you're doing X, Y, Z with a high enough frequency that we already know where this is going. We're going to cut our losses. Thank you for your time. Goodbye. So that was kind of the idea I ran with. And the Metro Nashville's Police Department's training academy was already collecting a certain valuable bits of data for trainees. This included like training instructors notating in a Word document on the network drive, hey, trainee so-and-so on date and time, whatever, did X, Y, Z, such as forgot to bring their holster to the academy, forgot their ball cap, forgot whatever it might be, some piece of equipment, or they fell out of a run today, or they failed their gun qual. So there was multiple things that was already being documented by the fantastic instructors at the training academy. Because hopefully, for the majority of these trainees, they can correct that performance and it's fine. All trainees are going to make mistakes. I had my slip-ups. I think everybody does in the training academy because it's a whole new world.
Right.
Going from being a civilian to sworn in a paramilitary organization where there's a high degree of performance expected, and you know that you're about to be able to exercise control over really, at times, other people's lives. Literally being able to physically take control of them, charge them with a crime that could possibly put them away for years or life. It's a serious thing. And so I think the training academy experience is designed to take that into account,
right,
and put out qualified individuals who could handle that responsibly and function well. But when you have individuals early on demonstrating that they are prone to lying, pathological liars, when they're asked questions, even about a slip up on the gun range or whatever, or doing jumping jacks, and they can't just be honest about it. Like, I messed up, you know, let me do a few push-ups and move on. Well, if we can't trust them in a small thing like that, how can you trust them in bigger things? So integrity is a huge thing. Emotional intelligence, their discipline and ability to demonstrate professionalism. So that's where I geared my staff study toward. And I created a theoretical framework, but maybe we'll get into it on another episode. But long story short, I wasn't given the data I needed to be able to actually draw a firm quality conclusion on it. I could only create a theoretical framework and show that we could do or apply a statistical analysis using nominal values for certain conduct and determine whether or not bad behavior occurred with sufficient frequency that it could be considered statistically significant outside of the range of normal behavior. And it's possible, and I believe it could be done, but more research is needed. But I think, you know, just the story you share is an example of somebody who, yeah, it's funny. We might be tempted to only laugh it off. But I get the impression the other stories we're going to hear about from him shows us that these little things are really indicative of much worse. And so I'm curious to hear the other stories you got for the same old Richard high performance parts.
That's exactly right. And from what I'm gathering, how you explain that, there probably should be a more traditional corrective action process when it comes to the academy, instead of me correcting behavior through just smoking people. So, for example,
right,
Richard not wearing the correct attire to that class outside of the academy should have been addressed by a normal corrective action process by saying, hey, we gave you a direct order to wear XYZ. You didn't wear it, so it's an occurrence. So it's going to be marked down as an occurrence. And if you have so many of these occurrences while in the academy, we will dismiss you or wash you out or recycle you to another academy class. But as far as this time in this academy class, you won't be making this one.
Yeah.
And if they did do it that way, they would be able to, I guess, properly and more correct, keep up with what people are actually doing to cause these occurrences. And we can actually pinpoint, okay, like you said, this person is lying about little bitty stuff, yeah, or this person is disobeying little bitty orders. So what's going to happen if we tell them they got to stand on a large bomb command in downtown Nashville and do a specific thing we're asking them to do for an entire 12 hours or 8 hours? Can we trust that they'll do that and not mess that up? And the answer is probably no, because we've already found that that person can't even follow little instructions.
Right.
So how much time are we giving them in the small moments, or the long moments, to where they can pick little moments in time to do their own thing? Well, I'm going to be here for 8 hours, so I can go over here to the Sbarro's and grab a slice and sit down and eat. But all the while, news people are walking up on the scene, because you're supposed to be standing there and holding the line and not allowing people to come up to the bomb scene.
Yeah, and people's ability to make excuses in moments, to do just what they want to do. Like, yeah, you could stand on the street corner and direct traffic or watch an empty sidewalk for a whole shift and nothing at all happens. That's true. That happens. That's a lot of overtime jobs for officers and extra jobs and stuff. It's a whole lot of nothing. But people are in positions. Officers are placed on assignments on post because there's a chance something might happen. Mm-hmm. And they have a responsibility in their little tiny area to make sure that things are on the up and up and they're being counted on for that time period. And so if they can justify, oh, the last 6 hours, nothing's happened, I'm going to walk down to Sbarro and grab me a slice of pizza. Next 5 minutes, you get a news crew rolling up in there, or somebody slips into a crime scene and things walk off, you know, or there's a safety risk. So, yeah.
Or the information becomes contaminated.
Yeah.
The evidence.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't take that into account or look at it as a factor, because everybody wants information now. We want it now, 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 now. But like you said, easily somebody could walk up, contaminate the whole scene by adding more footprints, adding more fingerprints. Now we got to go through, instead of going through 5 fingerprints, we got to go through hundreds now, because we let all of these people come in and touch stuff. And we have to exclude people. Oh, okay, that was just a Channel 2 dude. Or, hey, that was just the guy who walked through with his dog. Or, hey, that's the footprints of the guy and his 3 kids that accidentally walked through. So now we have to exclude all this stuff to get to the actual real information.
Yeah, exactly. And in that scenario you put forth, that's giving fuel to the future defense attorney of the suspect or the criminal. Because they're going to say, look, they couldn't even maintain a crime scene. You know, we're giving them something they can articulate and argue against the state's proof, and were at the end of the day, there would have been a victim and their family who's counting on officers to get it right. And it can just take one irresponsible officer to potentially ruin a whole case. And, you know, now that you say that, I've got a story. Yeah, I remember. Yeah. So on a future episode, we'll talk about one where an officer is called to a scene on supposedly some kind of accidental injury. And the failure to take action and do what's expected in the situation, even when his rookie is telling him, hey, shouldn't we do X, Y, Z? And he doesn't. And it's pretty significant. So, yeah, I'll leave that at that, and that'll be a future episode for us.
Okay, good deal. Well, that's all I've got for today. Again, thank you for tuning in to IAGBU. But as always, please remember, be good and be safe.